Are you tired of conventional political talk? Enter a new dimension of political talk, current events, politics, entertainment. The Current Podcast is on now.
Everybody, and welcome to this episode of The Current, episode number 73, October 21st, 2007. I am Jacob Bodner in the Tom Frank Studios. Hope you all had a wonderful week since the last time you heard me. I've had quite the busy week. I've always liked to flaunt whenever I have a busy week because I usually don't. Because to be honest with you, I really don't have a life. This is my life right here. You're listening to my life. But so when I actually experience the life of a normal person, I like to flaunt that. Let's go over my week here. Monday I had work and school. Tuesday I had work and school. So both those days, you know, away from the home, the studios, from about 7 in the morning to 9 at night. Wednesday, we had a day off of school, but yet I still had things to do. I went up to Michigan State and I did a college visit to their broadcasting school. And then on Thursday, I had journalism day, which I was gone from about 7 to about 3 in Lansing, Michigan. Came back. About 4 o'clock, I left for Syracuse, New York, to go on a college visit to Syracuse. So I was gone Thursday, and then Friday I was in Syracuse for the college visit, and I was at the campus from about 8 to, 8:30 to about 3, and then I came and we stayed off in Erie, Pennsylvania, and then we came back here. So then Saturday, here it is, and I was planning for the show, getting ready for the show, and then here I am for the show today. So I've had quite the busy week, a little bit of a blunder, but I'm here today giving you what's gone on in the week, and quite a bit has gone on at that. We had Hillary Clinton. She's caught in more donation scandals. I mean, my gosh. British healthcare system is showing us in America why we should not have universal healthcare. We'll talk about that. Middle school providing the pill to students. Believe it or not, a middle school. We'll talk about that. 2008 presidential update filled with more Clinton and Giuliani. And then the good news from Iraq is what we always like to end off on a good note here on The Current. Beautiful. So like I said, this is The Current, episode number 73. We're getting up there. We're getting up there in episodes. It's amazing. Unbelievable. But, you know, like I said, I was gone. I was in Syracuse, New York, for a college visit to Syracuse University. Beautiful school, by the way. I'm not going to denounce them in any way, because if they listen to the show to get an idea of who I am and what I do, I don't want to make, you know, them hear like, oh, he thinks we suck. We're not going to, you know, that kind of thing. But we did stop off at Erie, Pennsylvania. Erie, Pennsylvania, nice town on the Lake Erie in Pennsylvania, hence the name. And, you know, we stayed at a courtyard by Marriott. And Marriott guy, by the way, a Mormon. Not that it has any bearing on the story, just an interesting factoid. Anyway, so we went to Cracker Barrel behind the Marriott, and we're sitting in the Cracker Barrel waiting to get seated, and this group of 20 students come in from elementary school wanting to be seated. And they say, well, we have, you know, like 20 kids here, blah, 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 and the guy's like, fine, whatever. And they're pushing. There's like four. That's like five parties right there worth of people that the guy said to be waited and be seated. Here's my thought process. Let's take a lesson here, a lesson on morals through this story. And that would be to always alert any place you're going to go to when you're going to have a party of like 20 people, unless it's like 12 at night and you're open and there's going to be like every table in the place is open. At least alert them and say, hey, we're going to have like 20 people coming by. But there was something else I was going to mention, but I forgot. Oh, well, whatever. So let's start off today with our big story. always like to start off with a big story, and it's always just wonderful and glorious when our big story is Hillary Clinton. And she's been caught in a little bit of a, well, let's say, more donation scandal. We remember the whole Sue thing, or Norman Sue, or Sue, or Hugh Sue. He's got a Chinese name. I don't pronounce Chinese names very well. So we remember that thing where basically she accepted money from him through parties and donation parties and donations and bundling. He bundled money, which would be, there was these, I can't remember the name of the family, but the family that he said, okay, they donated this money when really it was bundled from him, all that kind of jazz. And she gave that money back. Of course, she wouldn't know that had it not been uncovered by, you know, in the public eye, because she knew it was going on. There's no way you don't know something like that's going on, but she gave it back. So now, though, she's caught up in a little bit of more of a snafu situation, snafu is actually it's actually an acronym, believe it or not, and I don't know if it's on here. This is totally, this has nothing to do with the show. Anyways, so, she's caught in another bit of a scandal here. Let's go over this real quick. I know, the show is so busy today, I don't know why I'm going through meaningless things like this. Alright, so this is from Los Angeles Times. It says, something remarkable has happened at 44 Henry Street, a grimy Chinatown tenant with peeling walls. It has also happened nearby at a dingy lighted apartment building with trash bins clustered by the front door. And again, not too far away, at 88 East Broadway beneath the Manhattan Bridge. All three locations, along with scores of others scattered throughout some of the poorest Chinese neighborhoods in Queens, Brooklyn, and the Bronx, have been swept by an extraordinary impulse to shower money on one particular presidential candidate, Democratic front-runner Hillary Rodham Clinton. People in these living conditions are pouring $1,000 or $2,000 donations into the Clinton camp. In April, a single fundraiser in an area long known for its gritty urban poverty yielded a whopping $380,000, while Senator John F. Kerry of Massachusetts, of course, when he ran for president in 2004, only received $24,000 from the same town. She receives $380,000, he receives $24,000, something's not right now. Something you have to know about this town. Average household income in Chinatown, in this particular neighborhood which she is fundraising, $21,000 a year. It's something like, I don't know the exact number, but something like 40% are below the poverty line. Yet they find enough money to donate $1,000 or $2,000 to Hillary Clinton. Quite a bit of a fishy situation, as you could tell. Now, Clinton has enlisted the aid, of course, according to the Los Angeles Times article, has enlisted the aid of Chinese neighborhood associations, especially those representing recent immigrants from Fujian province. The organizations, at least one of which is descendant of a Chinatown criminal enterprises that engaged in gambling and human trafficking, exert enormous influence over immigrants. The associations help them with everything from protection against crime to obtaining green cards. Many of Clinton's Chinatown donors said they had contributed because leaders in neighborhood associations told them to. In some cases, donors said they felt pressure to give. So let's just get this straight here. Clinton is in terms peer pressuring these poor, literally and figuratively, citizens of Chinatown to donate, and she's doing this through Chinatown gangs. This is what I'm getting out of this situation. That's the only way I can read this right there. Which I'd have to imagine would be a massive violation of FEC law. Just a guess. Don't really know, but that sounds illegal to me. As with other campaigns looking for dollars in unpromising places, the Clinton operation also has accepted what it later conceded were improper donations. Ooh, finally, admitting her being wrong. Let's mark that down as the first time in history. At least one reported donor denies making a contribution. Another admitted to lacking the legal resident status required for giving campaign money, which goes back to the Norman Sue thing, where they basically bundle money, it's called, where one person who's really rich, you can only donate, I feel like it's $2,300, I believe, is the amount. Yeah, $2,300 per election per candidate. It's just per election, actually. So when someone reaches the $2,300 sky, the limit that they can donate to a campaign, what do they do? And this is what Norman Sue did. They say, all right, you over there, poor man, you know, okay, we're going to donate X amount of dollars. We're going to donate the maximum in your name, and you just pretend like you did it. And what that does then is that money did not come from them, but it's stated as coming from them, and it appears to be from them. It's illegal, horribly illegal. And of course, I'm sure it goes on, and I'm sure it goes on in many campaigns, but what's happened is it's going on quite a bit, and publicly at that, in the Clinton campaign, which is no too good for her. Quote, "We have hundreds of thousands of donors. We are proud to have support from across New York and the country from many different communities," campaign spokesman Howard Wolfson said. "In this instance, our own compliance process flagged a number of questionable donations and took the appropriate steps to be sure they were legally given. In cases where we couldn't confirm that, the money was returned." Now, remember the case, the Paul family, that's the name of the family. The Paul family, a poor family from San Francisco, lived in a shack. Lived in a shack, donated something like $2,000. A bunch of people in the family donated money. Altogether, they donated like $100,000 to the Clinton campaign. If I am to believe that Howard Wolfson is telling the truth and that the Clinton campaign goes through this process in which they flagged $1,000 and $2,000 donations from poor families in Chinatown, how come they didn't flag these donations from the Paul family, a poor family in San Francisco? That is the question I have, as well as all these other donations that the LA Times has brought out in the past. How come those weren't flagged? If the same process was being used, which is what he says, why weren't those flagged? Quite simply, they were. They knew they were illegal. They knew something was fishy. They just didn't bring it up. And then what would happen? Because no one had proof that they knew. So what would happen then is when it came out in the press, like it did, what did they say? They said, "Oh, we didn't know. We didn't know." They played the ignorance card. And they can't do that anymore, though, because now what happened is now people expect them to look meticulously at every donation. So now what they're doing is they're taking select donations, these $7,000, that's it, and giving it back. Even though the LA Times showed three instances, and even more, we'll go down the list, of even more suspicious donations that they have not given back yet. The Times examined the cases of more than 150 donors who provided checks to Clinton after fundraising events geared to the Chinese community. One third of those donors could not be found using property, telephone, or business records. Why weren't those flagged and returned? Most have not registered to vote, according to public records. Why haven't those been flagged and returned? And several dozen were described in financial reports as holding jobs, including dishwasher, server, or chef, that would normally make it difficult to donate amounts ranging from $500 to the legal maximum of $2,300. The tenant at 44 Henry Street was listed in Clinton's campaign reports as the home of Xu Feng Li, who reportedly gave $1,000. How nice of Xu Feng Li. A tenant living in the apartment listed as Li's address said, though, through a translator, that she had not heard of him, although she had lived there for the last 10 years. A man named Liang Zhang was listed as having contributed $1,000 as well. The address given was a large apartment building on East 194th Street in the Bronx, but no one by that name could be located there. Salesperson at a store on Canal Street were similarly baffled when asked about Shi Kang Chang, listed as working there and having given $1,000. The store sells purses, jewelry, and novelty Buddha statues, which, by the way, great combination. It's like they're planning the store and they're thinking, okay, we can sell purses, we can sell jewelry, what else? We gotta have three things. Got it, novelty Buddha statues. That's so perfect. Anyways, employees said they had not heard of Chang. Another listed donor, Yi Ming Lu, said he did not make the $1,000 contribution in April that was reported in his name. He said he attended a banquet for Clinton but did not give her any money. None of those people have been refunded, as far as I know. According to the article, they didn't say if they've been refunded or not. I don't want to do, but as far as I know, those people were not the ones being refunded. Now, I could be wrong, but I'm sure there's more. Let's put it that way. So she gives $7,000 back. Let's talk about that. Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton's presidential campaign returned $7,000 in donations last spring that were linked to a fundraising event in Chinatown in New York, campaign officials said yesterday. Acknowledging other instances where questionable donors came into Mrs. Clinton's political orbit. She has an orbit now, and people are coming into the orbit. That's weird. I don't know. Bad analogy in my mind. Anyways, the Clinton campaign said that after the Chinatown fundraiser in April, which raised about $380,000, aides conducted a standard review, of course, standard review, of the donor list. If donors stated professions, campaign sent letters asking them to affirm in writing that the money was their own. In seven cases, the donations totaling $7,000, questions were raised. Noticed how it was $7,000. Lesser of the amounts given. And those donors did not respond to requests to confirm their contributions. That money was then returned. So if you didn't confirm it, your money was returned. It didn't matter if you were poor as dirt and they didn't think you could give it. If as long as you affirmed it, even if you were being given incentives by somebody else to affirm it and say, yeah, just write it out. Yeah, check the yes box. It wouldn't matter. You would be fine. Asian Americans in Chinatown and Flushing have the same right to contribute as every other American, said Howard Wolfson, a campaign spokesman. Of course they do. No one is denying the right of them to contribute. No one is saying they're Chinese, they can't contribute. People are saying they're poor as dirt. How can they contribute? Not can they contribute, it's how can. How are they feasibly, how are they fiscally possible to contribute to your campaign? The organizer of the Chinatown event, Chung Sato, a former executive director of the New York Senate State Democrat Committee, said yesterday that she knew of nothing improper about any donors at her event. Of course she didn't. Why would she be like, yep, I knew there were improper donors there. You fools. What a stupid quote. Of course you have to get a quote from her to be, you know, journalistically ethical, but come on. And then now, okay, so that was that. We'll put that aside. If you wanted one reason to not have Hillary Clinton as your next president, there's one. She's dirty. She's filled with dirt. And dirt's coming out against her more than anybody else. And I love the people that say, I know somebody who thinks that Hillary Clinton is dirt, scumbag, something's fishy about her. But her husband, amazing. No, it runs in the family. Who do you think gave who the dirt? Okay, it's not like you have one person with a bunch of dirt and scum and grime who's a horrible, evil person who takes illegal donations, and one person who's perfectly fine. No. Bill's the same way. I'm sure if you go back in his finance records, it just wasn't at the time where the technology was available for the blogosphere and the websites to search this kind of stuff. It just simply wasn't there. It was a lot harder to search through FEC filings back in 1992 and 1996 than it is now. Are you kidding me? I mean, now you just go, you hop on the FEC website and you type in the Clinton. You can go through everything there. You can type in the name of the candidate and you can look through everybody who donated. Every single person, every pack, everything. Back then, it was all paper. You could just hop on the internet. You would have to go there, and you'd have to look through all the crap. It would just be a pain in the butt. The same, and I'm not just saying it's the Clintons. I'm not stapling this label on the Clintons only. I'm sure many other campaigns have done it. They just seem to be the ones that always get caught. But that would be one reason not to vote for her. Here's another reason. She loves to spend money. New York Times article shows that New School, which is Sue was a trustee on the board of the New School in New York, is now getting money in an earmark from Hillary Clinton. And in the case of the New School in Greenwich Village, it turned out to have some national renaissance. Norman Sue, a major Democratic donor active in Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton's presidential campaign, and a New School trustee was found to be a fugitive who had skipped out after a felony theft conviction after 15 years. Because he was connected to the New School. Now, in the latest Labor, Health, and Human Services Spending Bill, which is Senate Bill 1710, 1710, or 1710, or 171 with a zero at the end of it. Clinton and Schumer, they teamed up and they spent a lot of our money, and $950,000 of which went to the New School, coincidentally the same place where Norman Sue, who illegally contributed money to her campaign, happens to be a trustee. Gee, surprise, surprise. Furthermore, the entire bill, only Clinton and Schumer earmarks. There are 28 Clinton and Schumer earmarks on that bill. $14,450,000 go to the state of New York and to them. Not to them in their pockets, but their earmarks. $14,450,000 of earmarks by Hillary Clinton and Chuck Schumer. That's unbelievable. Unbelievable. And I looked, I searched Obama just for kicks. He's got 3 earmarks. Now, I didn't go down the whole list, I just kind of searched around. And I don't know this for certain, but I have to imagine that she has the most of anybody on that bill. But I'm not gonna say she does or doesn't. I don't know that for sure, but just by scanning the bill the way I did, it looks like she does. That's ridiculous. And we'll talk a little bit more about her spending in the presidential update a little later, because there's even more. But now we have Edwards condemning Clinton, of course. That's what whenever he gets a chance, he can never come out and show evidence that she's been dirty or done something wrong. He can only come out and say she shouldn't have done that, and that was wrong. And in the South, we don't do that in the South. Not at the Edwards Ranch. At the Edwards Ranch, we are always ethical and good people at the Edwards Ranch. In my SUV and truck with my kids in my 30,000 square foot house in Recreation Center. Alright, anyways, after an article in Friday's LA Times, blah, 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 the opportunity, the Clinton thing, whatever, we talked about that. Quote, this morning we all read in LA Times that many Clinton campaign contributions are raising eyebrows again. Hold on, let me read this in my John Edwards voice, because it just makes it more fun. This morning we all read in LA Times that many Clinton campaign contributions are raising eyebrows again. Many of their donors are not even registered to vote, and at least one did not even make any contribution at all. Edwards campaign manager David Bowen... Oh, that wasn't Edwards. Oh, man, I ruined it. Well, hopefully his campaign manager's from the South, too. They said in a statement Friday, Senator Clinton has said public financing is the answer. Senator Edwards has opted to take... I wish he said this, because I'd love it when people talk in the third person, and it would be hilarious if he did. But anyways, Senator Edwards has opted to take a public financing... happened to take public financing, but Senator Clinton has not. Maybe that's because she's making oodles and oodles of money. Senator Clinton should explain why she doesn't mean what she says. The bottom line is we need a nominee who can do two things. Ooh, I wonder what those two things are. Be from the South and be John Edwards. Ooh, not so much. But it is. Campaign in all 50 states and challenge our broken system in Washington. With every day, the growing question has to be, can Hillary Clinton do either? Question mark. Exclamation point. Question mark. You know, John Edwards is a little, not only is he a little over dramatized, he's a little over dramatic. He's a drama queen from the South. And what he does is quite common. He doesn't actually do anything to find out if someone's doing something wrong. He just condemns them when something is done wrong. And then, when he does anything wrong, whoever condemns him for doing something wrong is a killer and a meanie. And hates his cancerous wife. That's what it seems to be. It seems to be that anybody who calls him out for doing something wrong is the devil. And anybody who calls, and he can call, but he calls out everybody. He just sits on the roof of his 30,000 square foot house and points at everybody who's wrong. Wrongdoer, wrongdoer, Satan. But when anybody says he's wrong, no. He's opening up a can of Southern whoop-ass on you. No, he's never wrong. He is a Southern angel. Anyways, we have to go to a... I love making fun of John Edwards. It's the only reason I do this show week in and week out. We have to go to a quick commercial break. We'll be back with a little more of a show. Coming up after the break, we've got... we've got the British healthcare system showing us why we shouldn't have universal healthcare. Stick around for that after the break.
This is The Current.
Hey everyone, it's Jacob. Just dropped by to remind you to check out The Current forums. If you love the show, and I know you do, then check them out. Just go to www.thecurrentpodcast.com/forum and sign up for a membership. It's free. You can discuss current events and politics with conservatives just like yourself. It's a great way to get your voice heard, and it'll make you feel warm and fuzzy inside. I promise. Check it out, www.thecurrentpodcast.com/forum.
Hi, this is Jamie from America's Debate Radio. Be sure to tune in every Wednesday night at 9 o'clock Eastern as Mike and I take your phone calls on today's top stories and hottest issues. That's America's Debate Radio. Find out more at radio.americasdebate.net.
Hey everyone, it's Jacob from The Current Podcast. I just wanted to let you know of a great organization called the Gamers Outreach Foundation. It seems that after every time a teenager kills someone, video games are automatically the cause. They've become the scapegoat, and for that reason, they get a pretty bad rap. That's the beauty of the Gamers Outreach Foundation. Started by Zach Weigel, the goal of the organization is to do good for the community through games. Check out their MySpace at myspace.com/gamersoutreach. There you can donate money and find out more about the organization. With your help, they can assist communities throughout the country through the greatest social interaction tool of our time, video games. Ooh, welcome back, everybody. Everybody is working for the weekend, even though it's Sunday. We're already working for the weekend. And did you know there were only 8,000 cars in the United States in 1902 and only 144 miles of paved roads? That's your captain and Pirate Coconut Head stat of the day. They're doing fine over there. Pirate Coconut Head still have the same look on his face. Same look as when I bought him. It's $5 in Virginia. $5. That's it. I mean, he's not even genuine coconut either, which really sucks. Welcome back to The Current, everybody. Episode 73, October 21st, 2007. And I want to touch now on a topic I have begun to love. And it's the topic of universal healthcare. It's a topic that since it's come up, since the Michael Moore movie has come out, and since everybody's been talking about it, I've been researching, I've been doing a lot of discussion about it, and I've come, obviously my conclusion is no, we don't want it, we don't need it. And I'd like to provide you with evidence to the fact that, excuse me, that we don't. This is a Sky News article, and there's actually two articles in this that are going to prove to you why we don't need it and why it's not good. Because everyone talks about, oh my God, people in Britain love their universal health care like they love their own child, which was brought to them by the universal health care. The fact of the matter is, it's not all glitz and glamour over there with universal health care. In a lot of ways, it's more hurt than it is good. The NHS, which is the National Health System, is it the National Health System or the National National Health Service? Excuse me, in Britain, is financially a blunder. They're in the hole. The reports saying that they're going to be $7 billion in debt in a couple years. I mean, it's not good. And these two stories really epitomize why they suck. Falling number of NHS dentists are forcing many patients. So, falling number of the National Health Service dentists are leaving. That's point one, are forcing many patients to go without treatment or even try pulling out their own teeth, a study has revealed. Almost a fifth, or 19%, of those questions said they had missed out on dental work because of the cost. A fifth! Almost 20% say they missed out on dental work because of the cost, whereas in this country, we want universal health care when truly there are only 4.5 million people who really should be uninsured at this point. 40.5 million people are uninsured but could be right now. That's not even a fifth.
You all just heard it. Big announcement.
Sorry about that. That's not even a fifth. That's a minuscule amount. The research found 6% had even resorted to treating themselves because they could not find a dentist. No, that's it's almost 1 in 10. Almost 1 in 10 resorted to pulling out their own teeth. Well, I shouldn't say that, but treating themselves. The 5,000-plus patients who were interviewed also spoke of taking out their own teeth or fixing broken crowns with glue. Roger from London told the Your Story section of the Sky News website that he combines visits to the dentist with holidays in Egypt. He says, I was quoted over €2,000, which is $2,857, for a bridge by a dentist in the UK. I had 2 weeks in a 5-star hotel all-inclusive in Egypt. Health Minister Ben Bradshaw told Sky News it was a myth that everyone used to be able to get free dental treatment on the NHS. Quote, at this very highest, it was 60% in this country. Now it's 56%. We have always paid for dental care, even the NHS. It was 60%. 60% at its highest, and now it's at 56%. It's gone down the amount of people it covers. It's gone down, mainly because they're losing money. Almost three-fifths, 58% of dentists, blame new contracts brought in by the government last year. The government is bringing in bad contracts, and these dentists say, I'm not going to deal with this, I'm leaving. 58% said they left because of bad contracts by the government. 4 out of 10, 41%, felt they had a, quote, excessive workload, with 29% saying they had problems recruiting or retaining dentists. That's just the dentist side of it. That's just your dental care. Now, John Edwards says, well, I'll give you dental care. Well, here's the problem. It might not have enough money. It might short of money. You might have dentists leaving because of government contracts. The government gets demanding because they're losing money on this. And then you're going to have people pulling out your own teeth. Do you want that to happen in America? Of course not. Of course not. This is a Daily Mail article. A British couple has to deliver their own child. During a difficult pregnancy, Elizabeth Jones was monitored every day because doctors were worried about the health of her baby. But on the day of the birth, she was twice turned away from the hospital because it was full, forcing her partner to deliver the baby himself at their home. Their excitement at the prospect of the birth soon turned to horror when staff on the ward told them, quote, sorry, we are full, come back later. I'm pregnant, my baby's about to come out. I'm sorry, we're full, just go come back later. Now listen to what they said. They said medics at the Princess of Wales Hospital in Bridgend near Cardiff insisted the baby would not arrive for hours and suggested the couple go have a cup of coffee while they tried to free up the bed. Your baby's not going to come out. Don't worry. I know you're having contractions. Don't worry. Just go have a cup of coffee and you'll be fine. And come back when we've got a bed. 3 hours later, they returned to the hospital when Miss Jones's contractions became more frequent. This time, she was given a thorough examination by a midwife who confidently sent them away for the second time, telling them the baby was still, quote, hours away. 2 times they turned away. Once again, the frustrated couple headed back to their home in Bridgend. But within minutes, Miss Jones felt the baby arriving. Within minutes! Oh, it's just a couple hours away. Minutes later, out pops the baby. Let's see. Her partner's 17-year-old daughter, Christy, called 999, which is the equivalent of 911, and relayed instructions as he delivered the baby himself on October 12th at 11 a.m. Quote, it was a great experience, but at the time, I wish we were in a hospital in a controlled environment, Mr. Jones said. What if something bad had gone wrong? You hear so much about the NHS being under pressure, but you would think that maternity would be a priority. Many things can wait for a later appointment, but never a baby. It's very worrying that they haven't got the facilities to do the job properly when you want it. Okay, that's just on the surface. But even worse, during her pregnancy, Miss Jones became a regular visitor to the hospital because the baby was growing unusually slowly. She was given scans twice a week and was monitored by the maternity team on a daily basis. Yet when it came time for the baby to pop out, not enough beds were available. Now, this says two things. One, either they don't have enough money to have enough to have more beds. Two, they don't have enough money to have more staff. Or three, there's just a bunch of people having sex and having babies. I'm guessing it's the first two. And I'm guessing that if it wasn't universal health care, she wouldn't have had a problem. Now, let's take a closer look, though, at the financial, how financially the NHS is doing over there, the National Health Service. You know, we have to look at other countries, because you know why we have to look at other countries and their shortfalls and their programs? Because if we can say we're the only industrialized country that doesn't have universal health care and we should have it, then we have to look at these other countries and say, all right, this is bad. We have to take, they're not doing good over there. And maybe we shouldn't do this. This is from John Humphreys, who runs a blog, I think, U.gov or something like that. As we approach the end of the financial year, the NHS is heading deep into the red. Back last year, Patricia Hewitt, the health secretary, predicted that there would be a deficit of around $200 million, €200 million, which is $285,760,000. But already it stands at €623 million, or $890 million. And analysts forecast that it will reach $800 million, or $1,143,000,000, or even higher. It's true that this year's forecast deficit is only a very small percentage of the total outlay on the NHS, around 1%. But experts have argued that if things go on as they are now, the deficit will grow to unimaginable proportions, especially when the growth of money spent on the NHS slows down. A study by Professor Nick Bonasque for the Reform think tank predicts an annual deficit of nearly $7 billion in 2010. It's because of this that in recent months, Sir Nigel, former chief executive of the NHS, has been leaning on primary care trusts, PCTs, and hospital trusts to cut their spending and get their finances back into the black. Already the effects are being seen, operations have been postponed, training has suffered, and PCTs have frozen staff vacancies. On the day of Sir Nigel's resignation, the Royal Cornwall Hospital Trust announced that it was axing 300 jobs in order to reduce its deficit to $8 million this year. What's happening in Britain? They're losing money. Why are they losing money? Because one central thing controls their health insurance, the government. The government can't give enough money from the people to fund the health insurance thing. They're already taking a lot of money away from the people to fund the health insurance, the NHS. But it's not enough. They're losing money and losing money. Now, several things can be happening. They simply don't have enough money. They simply aren't taxing the people enough and need to tax them more. Or the people don't have less money. Or there's something going on and the money's getting shuffled around and it's not getting to the right place. And it's probably a combination of two. What happens in our health system is you have multiple people, you know, working, you know, in multiple corporations on their own money. The government doesn't have to worry about it. They don't have to worry about it. And they have to worry about Medicare and Medicaid and SCHIP and all that jazz. But they don't have to worry about the central thing and funding the central thing. What happens if we get universal health care over here? Which is inevitably going to happen if Hillary Clinton or any of the Democrats get elected. We get universal health care. And within 10... Now, remember, the Britain universal health care dates back to the 90s. You know, this isn't like, you know, immediately it's suffering debt-wise. This is down the road, which is even scarier. I would rather have it happen immediately within 2-3 years that we're going into debt in this program, because then we'll have time to turn around and say, okay, that sucked. Let's go back to how it used to be. But if we go 10 years down the road, we're in this in a mess. We're in a mess then. And if we go 10 years, 15 years, 20 years with universal health care, and then all of a sudden it starts losing money and we're getting in debt, oh boy, we're screwed. We can't just go back to the old thing like lickety-split. It didn't work like that, a snap of the fingers. And yet, with all this happening, with what I just explained to you, the Democrats are still pushing for an expansion of SCHIP, the State Children Health Insurance Program, which is just expanding in socialized medicine. That's all it is. On Thursday, the House failed to override President Bush's veto of a bill that would increase spending on the program to $60 billion over 5 years, doubling what Bush had proposed. $60 billion over 5 years. Unbelievable. $12 billion a year. SCHIP provides government-subsidized health insurance to low-income families. Quote, low-income families, remember that. The vast majority of the 6.6 million participants are children. The bill would have been funded by an increase in the cigarette tax by 61 cents per pack. Of course. Of course. Democrats wanted to expand SCHIP to middle class. Middle class, not low class, middle class. Sometimes covering families who make up to $83,000 a year. Now, if you're making $83,000 a year, first of all, chances are you've got health insurance through your employer. Second of all, I would not classify $83,000 a year as low income. I'd consider that middle class, and I'd consider that middle class who doesn't need the government's help to purchase health insurance and shouldn't receive the government's help. Plain and simple. There we go. Now, this next story is related to healthcare, but it's on the other spectrum of healthcare, not necessarily let's pay for healthcare, let's do universal healthcare. It's a little more sexual. Like that noise making? Yeah. That's right. It's a little more sexual. Students who have parental permission to be treated at King Middle School's health center would be able to get birth control prescriptions under a proposal that the Portland School Committee will consider Wednesday. This is in Maine, by the way. The fantastic state of Maine, which, besides their politics, beautiful state. Never been there, but I've heard it's beautiful. By Canada, so I wouldn't expect. The proposal would build on the King Student Health Center's practice of providing condoms as a part of its reproductive health program since it opened in 2000, said Lisa Belanger, a nurse practitioner who oversees the city's student health centers. If the committee approves the King proposal, it would be the first middle school in Maine to make a full range of contraceptives available to some students in grades 6 to 8. 6 to 8! Grades 6 to 8! I don't know about you, but I've never heard of anybody in 6th grade having sex and needing birth control or condoms, even 7th grade, even 8th grade. I've been through those grades, not very long ago. People were not having sex every chance and opportunity they got. That's to be honest with you, crazy. What has happened? Director of Teen Health Programs for Maine Department of Health and Human Services, most middle schoolers, take note of this, are ages 11 to 13. 11 to 13, are you kidding me? Let's besides the fact that it's illegal in the state of Maine to have sex at that young, we're going to give you birth control. If your parents allow it, why would your parents allow it? Why would your parents sign off on something like that? Yes, if my daughter or son wants, if my daughter wants birth control, give it to her. Are you kidding me? Who in their mind would sign off on something like that? A field trip, fine. A field trip to the local aquarium in sixth grade, fine. The zoo, whatever, but it used to be the only thing parents had to sign in your sixth grade, you'd bring home in sixth grade was, oh, you want to go to the zoo? All right, we'll sign that. You can go to the zoo. I have to read over the rules and the class rules. These are the class rules. No fighting, no screaming, no talking out of turn. Raise your hand. Put all your stuff in your cubby. Now what are they signing off on? Yes, you may give my son or daughter birth control, or my daughter, or my son condoms. That's what they're signing off on now. It's not like trips to the zoo and the aquarium. It's how to not get pregnant in 6th grade. If you're getting pregnant in 6th grade, which I don't even know if it's possible, I don't want to go into that, you've got some problems. Although students must have written parental permission to be treated at Portland school-based health centers, state law allows them, referring to the students, to seek confidential health care and to decide whether to inform their parents about the services they receive. So your 6th grader, who is barely even mature enough to do, fractions, can walk in and say, I want a contraceptive and I don't want my parents to know. And it would be fine, fully in their right, because they are old enough to make those mature decisions at the ripe old age of 11. Proponents say a small number of King students are sexually active, but those who are need better access to birth control. You know what? Call me crazy. But if you're sexually active at the age of 11 or 13, you don't need better access to birth control. You need better access to a brain, for one. And you need better access to parental supervision, number two. Quote, this is a service that is totally needed, Rose said. It's about very few kids, but they are kids who don't have the same opportunities and access as other students. They don't have the same opportunities and access, but they have more opportunities in sex and more access in sex. Their parents apparently don't care. You know, it would start at the parents. It would start at educating the child, not being like, all right, well, you can go have sex and we'll give you this. This is an incentive to go have sex at the age of 11. Really, it is. You can think, well, I don't have to worry about that. I can just hop into the nurse's office and get me a birth control pill. The percentage of middle school students in Maine who reported having sexual intercourse dropped from 23% in 1997 to 13% in 2005, which is great. Awesome. Now, here's a new report from the AP. It says that sexual misconduct is plaguing U.S. schools. And this is teacher to students. Students in America, and this is probably part of the reason why we're giving contraceptives to sixth graders now. Students in America's schools are groped, they're raped, they're pursued, seduced, and think they're in love. An Associated Press investigation found more than 2,500 cases over 5 years in which educators were punished for actions from bizarre to sadistic. The 7-month investigation found 2,570 educators whose teaching credentials were revoked, denied, surrendered, or sanctioned from 01 to 05 following allegations of sexual misconduct. Young people were the victims in at least 1,801 of the cases, and more than 80% of those were students. At least half of the educators who were punished by their states also were convicted of crimes related to their misconduct. From my own experience, this could get me in trouble. I think every single school district in the nation has at least one perpetrator, at least one, says Mary Jo McGrath, a California lawyer who has spent 30 years investigating abuse and misconduct in schools. It doesn't matter if it's urban or rural or suburban. One report mandated by Congress estimated that as many as 4.5 million students out of roughly 50 million in American schools are subject to sexual misconduct by an employee of a school sometime between kindergarten and 12th grade. That figure includes verbal harassment that is sexual in nature, much, by the way, like this.
Soft, sensual kissing.
Blanket, I want to see you so bad.
I'm bored and horny.
You'd like to have sex with older guys.
Online, Sorrentino, calling himself Italian Lover 37, like you know, some positions and moves. I'll just be your secret lover. I'll be the best sex you will ever have. I will go till you tell me to stop.
I've always waited for a time when I could say I could effectively use the Chris Hansen Dateline NBC to catch a predator sound clips, and I think I finally found that opportunity. Thank you, Jesus. But going back to the, actually the heart of the story, it's disturbing. Not only is it disturbing, but it's telling. It's telling that schools really aren't doing enough. It's disturbing because they started this article off with one story about a guy who did sexual misconduct at one school, was either fired or resigned from that one school, and then went on to teach at other schools across the country, and eventually was charged with these crimes of sexual misconduct. It seems to me that by just compare and contrast these two articles, it shows me that schools are really care more about offering condoms and contraceptives to students to make sure that they don't get pregnant but they can still have sex than actually stopping teachers from sexually harassing their pupils. Call me crazy, that's what I see here. And it's really, to me, it's really disturbing and really telling and kind of showing what the direction maybe this country's going in. But if you, honest to God, and going back to the contraceptive thing, if you're giving contraceptives to sixth graders, the least you can be doing is making sure that your staff isn't the ones that those sixth graders are having sex with, or seventh graders, or eighth graders. It's ridiculous. You know, too many things are happening in our middle school now. Middle schoolers, my gosh, are they're being exposed to more and more crap. Drugs, alcohol, sex now. I mean, my gosh, this is going to seep down. Is this going to seep down? Are we going to have kindergartners now smoking J's in class and drinking beers and having sex with each other during nap time? I mean, this is ridiculous. It just keeps going low. First it was just the college kids would do that. Then it seeped down into the high schoolers, and then it seeped down into the middle schoolers, you know, which now extends to sixth grade in some places. So now we're talking fifth, fourth, and third grade are what the next in line here. I mean, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but if the trend continues as it's been, that's what's going to end up happening, and it's disturbing. We got to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with a great billboard and some great people in the city of Mobile, Alabama. I always talk about Southern people and their accents. This is a great time to do it because we have some amazing clips from a story from Mobile, Alabama, and it's just funny to hear how people are just sometimes so stupid. But that is coming up after the break. You are listening to The Current.
This is The Current.
You all just heard it, our big announcement. Hi, this is Jacob from The Current Podcast. You just heard about our new podcast to educate people on current events and politics. It works like this. Each week, we take the top three stories in politics, explain them to you, and give you all the viewpoints. It's completely bipartisan. The show's premiering in September, but we don't have a name yet. That's where you come in. Email your name ideas to feedback@thecurrentpodcast.com. The winning name selected by our staff gets a year subscription to the Politico newspaper. That's a $200 value. So put that creativity to work. Email your ideas to feedback@thecurrentpodcast.com. That's FEEDBACK @thecurrentpodcast.com. Hey everyone, thank you for listening to The Current Podcast. Don't forget to get the show notes for this episode at www.thecurrentpodcast.com. There you can also listen to any show we've ever done, get individual segments from shows, read commentary from our writers, get more insight from my blog, The Blog of Bodner, and participate in our weekly poll. So what are you waiting for? Visit www.thecurrentpodcast.com now. Of course, finish listening to our show first, but after the show is done, please visit www.thecurrentpodcast.com. Lots of fun, I promise.
Hi, this is Jamie from America's Debate Radio. Be sure to tune in every Wednesday night at 9 o'clock Eastern as Mike and I take your phone calls on today's top stories and hottest issues. That's America's Debate Radio. Find out more at radio.americasdebate.net.
Hey everyone, it's Jacob from The Current Podcast. Do you ever feel like you can't keep up with the news? I know the feeling. We'll remedy that by visiting The Current Full Control. Full Control is a user-driven conservative news service. Users submit the news, users vote on the news. The more votes a story has, the higher up on the page it is. Memberships are free, and it's a great way to know what's going on in the world. So what are you waiting for? Just visit www.thecurrentpodcast.com/community and get started. Welcome back, everybody. Did you know Benjamin Harrison was the only grandson of a president to become president? That's kind of lame. Didn't think he knew that, though, but he might have. Power Coconut Head didn't know that. Because he doesn't have a brain. And welcome back, everybody, to The Current. This is episode number 73. I'm Jacob Bodner, Tom Frank Studios, and I was telling you before we left off that we're going to talk about a great story about a great billboard with a great slogan on it and great people involved. Overall, it's just a downright great story from Mobile, Alabama, or somewhere around that. So there's a billboard on Interstate 65 and Country Road 287, and you know that's out in the middle of nowhere because when the roads are called Country Road 287, no one's traveling on them. They weren't good enough to get a name. It's Country Road 287. That's it. They either ran out of names, they weren't creative enough, but it's Country Road 287. Mobile, Alabama, or somewhere around that. There's this guy, John McCombs, who owns a billboard on Interstate 65. And usually they're owned by companies. Apparently he owns it. Whatever. It doesn't really matter. So he owns this billboard. No one's bought any space on this billboard, probably because it's out in the middle of nowhere by Country Road 287. And so he puts up, you know, the advertisement that says, call here to advertise here. But he splits it in half, and the one side has a picture of Hugo Chavez, and he's holding a Citgo sign, and it says, don't buy gas from this ass, which I thought was pretty awesome. It's a great way to get the message out. It grabs people's attentions, and despite the fact that no one knows who that is, people see the Citgo logo, and they say, okay, we won't do that. So anyways, he owns the billboard, whatever, and he says, he called my president the devil, so I don't like him. He's in with Iran's president, and he hates America. That's the main thing. Sounds all right and dandy. So the local affiliate, I think NBC affiliate or something like that, Channel 5 in Mobile, Alabama, went out and did a story about this, and they talked to, I don't know if it was the problem of finding intelligent people. Remind you, this is Country Road 287 out in Hicktown, Hicksville, USA, probably one house every 3 miles. One smart person in the entire area, apparently, because these are the brilliant folks they talked to down on Country Road 287 near Mobile, Alabama. The first person is a guy who can't help but laugh at the word ass.
We just don't see ass on the side of the road everywhere we go in America. Or excuse me.
It's apparently funny to him. He hasn't heard the word often. Whatever. So we're gonna go in order of brilliance here. This guy, unfortunately, can't quite... I love this guy. Okay, so the main thing was, well, what if parents come... You know, you would have the argument that, well, what if parents were driving down the road, and what would their kids say if they saw this billboard on there? I think this next guy really grasps exactly what the parents would hear from the kids and exactly how you would deal with that situation.
Little kids come down here, then they'd be saying, Mama, what is this right here?
I gotta listen to that one more time.
Little kids come down here, then they be saying, Mama, what is this right here?
Mama, what is this right here? And the mom would, well, that is the word ass. And that means a donkey. Or a butt. You know, I love that guy's accent because it's like total like BP gas station worker accent. Now, the gas station, the local BP gas station, which is at the next stop, which I'd have to imagine is probably Country Road 286, or Country Road 288. I don't know which direction they're going in here, but it's one or the other. So she has a problem with the billboard because people might be confused, apparently.
Well, if you going fast, you think it's the next gas station, which is a BP station, not a Sitco.
No, you wouldn't think that. I saw the ad. You go online. It is a massive billboard with a picture of Hugo Chavez and the Sitco logo in the Sitco colors. Is the text. How you would get confused and be like, oh, that BP station, don't buy gas from there. You would not. You'd have to be an idiot. But then again, the people on Country Road 287 aren't the brightest people in the world. Then they asked the guy, who I guess had a problem with the word ass and laughed about it, who the guy on the billboard was. And his response was just awesome.
It was some kind of king or something that,
What was that again?
It was some kind of king or something.
Some kind of king or something. The king of Venezuela. And finally, we leave you in this segment with the pride of Alabama and the pride of Country Roads 286 through Country Road 288. Don't know his name, but he's got intelligence, folks.
Yeah, but that gas, it don't rhyme too well with ass, so, I mean, maybe I shouldn't have said that.
I think we learned us something. Let's learn us that again.
Yeah, but that gas, it don't rhyme too well with ass, so, I mean, maybe I shouldn't have said that.
I don't know what he's talking about. To me, gas rhymes perfectly with ass. I don't see where he's having a problem. Anyways, I just love to make fun of people in Alabama. On Country Road 287. Just by the way, everybody down there, Country Roads 286 or 288, please don't hurt me with your shotguns or anything. I'm just mean no harm. I come in peace. Love Country Road 286. Not so fond of 287. 288, great people. Presidential update now. Clinton wants to spend more of your money. Surprise, surprise. And she wants to spend it on things that the government has no business spending money on, like paid leave. I mean, there is an act enacted right now to do it, but she wants to expand it, of course, but I think it's fine where it is if it needs to be there at all. Clinton would provide for universal paid leave to allow people to care for children or parents. She said in a speech here this morning, the woman's conference or something, that's part of her week in talking about issues that matter to women. Her plan would offer $1 billion yearly in grants to states to develop such programs with the goal of having all states implement a paid family leave plan by 2016. Clinton would expand the Family Medical Leave Act, FMLA, to cover 13 million additional workers, ensure access to quality child care, and end discrimination against parents because of pregnancy. Quote, for me, this is a very personal issue because we all have a stake in the next generation, Clinton told the audience, seated in the gymnasium at a Manchester YWCA, which is, I don't know, women's community area. A generation of healthy children raised by strong families is in America's best interest. But you know what's not in America's best interest? Spending oodles and oodles of money. $1 billion a year? And that's guaranteed to grow? Clinton estimated the cost of this work-family agenda at about $1.75 billion per year. She said she would finance the plan by enacting anti-tax sheltering reform, which would establish a uniform definition of tax shelter. Such a change would raise $2 billion in 2012 and some $26 billion over 10 years. Her proposal reads, citing the Joint Committee on Taxation. I don't think people understand how it works. You have two choices when it comes to Hillary Clinton or anybody else. Hillary Clinton will take away your tax cuts. She will take away things. She will take away your tax breaks, thus taxing you more. This is the thing. I love this. People say, well, Hillary Clinton's not going to tax more. She's just going to take away the tax cuts. Well, okay, if you take away the tax cuts, what do you think is happening? For example, you have a piece of paper. You cut that piece of paper. You cut the corner of that piece of paper off. You have less of that paper. Let's say you take away that cut and you put that paper back on. You now have more of that paper. Let's think of that as taxes now. You have a paper of taxes. And you cut off a fourth of that paper. A fourth of your taxes is gone. But if you take back that cut, you have that fourth back on. It's not like, so it's really the same thing. Your tax cuts are being taken away, but she's not raising taxes. Well, basically... let's see here. So that's how she would pay for it. Republican National Committee spokesman Dana Diaz responds to Clinton's proposal. Hillary Clinton's agenda for working families is pretty clear. Higher taxes to pay for outrageous spending proposals totaling more than $750 billion. Senator Clinton's plans to grow government and weaken our national defense will not resonate with American families at any rung in the economic ladder. Here's the problem. It's really what it is. You're a family. Sure, you get universal paid leave and universal health care, but you are taxed so much now. What if you don't ever use that universal health care? What if you ever don't use that universal paid leave, but you're still taxed for it and you're still paying for it? And now here, we go on to more about Hillary Clinton and her massive spending. Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton, of course, New York, lost $1 million earmarked to fund a Woodstock Museum in Liberty, New York yesterday. Shucks, I really wish that Woodstock Museum was in Liberty, New York, because I would flock there to go see the Woodstock Museum. But she was successful, by the way, in securing $350,000 of tax dollars to fund the Gay Men's Health Crisis, Inc. According to a press release from her Senate office, the money will go towards decreasing the use of crystal methamphetamine, which contributes to HIV transmission in the gay community. She won't try to get rid of methamphetamine everywhere else, just in the gay community. An October 17th statement attributed to Clinton said, "The Gay Men's Health Clinic is providing a critical service in working to halt the devastation that methamphetamine brings to our community. With HIV/AIDS rates among the meth users more than twice as high as the general public, these funds are essential in helping the Gay Men's Health Clinic continue to fight against HIV/AIDS through treatment and prevention." Why don't you just give money to solving AIDS and fixing AIDS? And I'm talking slow and choppy because I realize she's a little slow in the head. A little slow in the head, so I gotta talk a little slower for her. If you gave that money to help find a cure for AIDS, you would not have to worry about the Gay Men's Health Clinic. You would benefit everybody instead of just the scope of people. She's trying to probably get the gay vote. And that would make more sense to me. Or stopping crystal meth using throughout the entire country, and not just the small scope of in the gay men's health community. I don't want to be paying for this, to be perfectly honest with you. And a lot of people probably don't want to be paying for this because I'm not gay. If I want to help the Gay Men's Health Clinic and help them fight AIDS, don't get me wrong, AIDS is horrible. I hope AIDS is discovered. I hope the cure for AIDS is discovered, and I hope it's not a problem anymore. But if I want to help them, I will help them on my own dime, when I want to, on my own terms. But I don't want to. What if I want to give my money to AIDS research as a whole? But now I'm being forced to give it to somebody else. Clinton also took credit for nabbing $200,000 in federal dollars for the American Ballet Theater. These earmarks were tucked into the fiscal year 2008 Commerce, Justice, Science, and Related Agencies spending bill. Now, from what we've discussed today, and today alone, just what we've discussed today, which was now that $200,000 for the American Ballet Theater, $350,000 for Gay Men's Health Crisis, Inc., $1.75 billion proposed for a universal paid leave, and $14,765,000, I think it was what it was, in earmarks in the Labor and Health Services Bill, Human Health Services Bill. From what we've just discussed today, in this episode, this week only, all that stuff took place this week, was proposed or happened this week, she has spent, or proposed to spend, $1,765,000,000. That's just what she's done and proposed this week, and that's all we've discussed on this show. I'm sure there's more. And I'm sure if we totaled it throughout the entire time, billions upon billions upon billions upon billions of dollars. Yet, she is going to get the national debt up. It's going to be out of the hole. We're going to be fiscally responsible. We are going to be breaking even. We are going to have a surplus. Fat chance. Can't have a surplus when you're spending $110 billion a year on healthcare, $1.7 billion a year on universal paid leave, and you're earmarking things, you know, everything imaginable to send to your state to get some, you know, nice pat on the back. Moving on, though, away from Clinton. Giuliani calls out Clinton now in her experience. They're not really moving away from Clinton. It was an interview with Sean Hannity on Hannity and Combs. This is the full excerpt. Here we go. Honestly, in most respects, I don't know Hillary's experience. She's never run a city. She's never run a state. She's never run a business. She's never met a payroll. She has never been responsible for the safety and security of millions of people, much less even hundreds of people. So I'm trying to figure out where the experience is here. It would seem to me that in a time of difficult problems and war, we don't want on-the-job training for an executive. The reality is that these areas in which, maybe there are some areas in which she has experience, but the areas of having the responsibility of the safety and security of millions of people on your shoulders is not something Hillary has ever had any experience with. That's true. People say, well, she was in the White House with Bill Clinton, and she was the first lady, and she saw firsthand how to do it. Come on, are you serious? She didn't even know Bill Clinton was, you know, having a little thing with Monica Lewinsky in the Oval Office. Are you seriously think that she was really monitoring him? She was just mooching off the perks, man. Riding around in limousines, eating the chef-prepared food, hanging out with her dog. Come on, are you serious? That's not experience. Observing is not experience. Sorry, that's not how, you just, that's not it. Experience. You're not a resident of a doctor, or you don't shadow a doctor and say, well, I've got experience being a doctor now. No, you don't. You don't. That's all she's done. She's shadowed a president, and that's not experience enough. A lot of people have shadowed a president. Everybody in the White House that worked with him shadowed him. And being a senator? Sorry, that's not much experience running a country either. Governor would be more so. A mayor would be more so. Not so much senator. Then Giuliani takes a little shot at Obama. I love Giuliani. This is why I like voting for Giuliani, because he's got fire. He's not afraid to attack other people. He's not afraid to attack Obama or Clinton, whereas Romney and everybody else on the Republican side has been, like, afraid to. And there is actually a Republican debate on right now that I'm missing to do this show, but I'm recording it, no fear. Republican presidential hopeful Rudy Giuliani on Tuesday ridiculed Democratic rival Barack Obama for saying he would meet without precondition with leaders of renegade nations. The Obama campaign answered back, arguing that Giuliani may not want to engage in diplomacy with outlaw leaders, but is willing to take their money. Quote, then he went on to explain that Ronald Reagan negotiated with the communists, Giuliani said, pausing and sighing. I say this most respectfully, you're not Ronald Reagan, you know? Here's what Ronald Reagan did before he negotiated with communists, the former New York mayor continued. First, he called them the evil empire. Then he took missiles, intermediate-range missiles, and he put them in European cities, and he pointed the missiles at Russian cities with the names on them. Then he said, in a very nice way, let's negotiate. Yet Obama is just going to say, oh, no precondition, I'll go over there and do that. And by the way, love to, you know, this is the perfect time to just insert this little thing. We are getting Barack Obama t-shirts. We're going to get t-shirts for every presidential candidate on the Democratic side, making fun of them any way or another. Our one for Obama right now, this is the one we're going to get printed up and you're going to be able to buy on our website. It's going to have Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. It's going to have Hugo Chavez. It's going to have Castro. And who else did he say? Everybody else he said, all the leaders that he said. I believe maybe Syria was the other one in North Korea, Kim Jong-il, something like that. Anyways, all the leaders he said, and then he's going to be in the foreground with an arm pointing like, come here, and the text is going to say, come chill with my homies. And you'll be able to buy that on thecurrentpodcast.com in the next couple weeks or so. We're going to work on getting those printed up. Our Hillary Clinton one, not quite sure what that's going to say. We are going to have a John Edwards one that says stupid is as stupid does, because he's the Forrest Gump of the competition. We're also going to have a Al Gore one that says global warming made me fat. So those are your t-shirts you can get from us. So anyways, Obama responded and said, "While Rudy Giuliani and Hillary Clinton do not think we should engage in the type of strong diplomacy practiced by Ronald Reagan and John Kennedy, Obama does." Ronald Reagan and John Kennedy. Now, he says, well, they talked to the communists during the Cold War, and Kennedy talked to the Cubans and whatever. Okay, yes, they did. But without preconditions is the key here. No. Obama spokesman Bill Burton said, and given the hefty fee that Hugo Chavez's oil company paid Rudy Giuliani's firm, he apparently thinks we shouldn't talk to Chavez, but it's fine to take his money. Well, yeah. But for starters, how cliche, of course. But the difference here is that Giuliani, when he was at that law firm, or still is, I'm confused about it, but when he took that money from him, he wasn't the president of the United States. It's not like he was the president of the United States and said, oh, I'll take that money. No. It's a little different when you're in that seat, when you're sitting in the Oval Office. We got to take a quick commercial break, one more break, and we'll be back ending our show off on a good note with the good news from Iraq. That's coming up right after this break. And then we have a couple, do we have a couple of announcements? I'm trying to think if we have any announcements or not. I'm not exactly sure, but I can check if we have any announcements. Right now I'm trying to look for the clip to play before we go out to commercial break. And it's kind of bugging me. All right, here we go.
This is The Current.
You all just heard it, our big announcement. Hi, this is Jacob from The Current Podcast. You just heard about our new podcast to educate people on current events and politics. It works like this. Each week, we take the top three stories in politics, explain them to you, and give you all the viewpoints. It's completely bipartisan. The show's premiering in September, but we don't have a name yet. That's where you come in. Email your name ideas to feedback@thecurrentpodcast.com. The winning name selected by our staff gets a year subscription to the Politico newspaper. That's a $200 value. So put that creativity to work. Email your ideas to feedback@thecurrentpodcast.com. That's FEEDBACK @thecurrentpodcast.com. Hey everyone, it's Jacob from The Current Podcast. I just wanted to let you know of a great organization called the Gamers Outreach Foundation. It seems that after every time a teenager kills someone, when video games are automatically the cause. They've become the scapegoat, and for that reason, they get a pretty bad rap. That's the beauty of the Gamers Outreach Foundation. Started by Zach Weigel, the goal of the organization is to do good for the community through games. Check out their MySpace at myspace.com/gamersoutreach. There you can donate money and find out more about the organization. With your help, they can assist communities throughout the country through the greatest social interaction tool of our time, video games.
Hi, this is Jamie from America's Debate Radio. Be sure to tune in every Wednesday night at 9 o'clock Eastern as Mike and I take your phone calls on today's top stories and hottest issues. That's America's Debate Radio. Find out more at radio.americasdebate.net.
Hey everyone, it's Jacob. Just dropped by to remind you to check out The Current forums. If you love the show, and I know you do, then check them out. Just go to www.thecurrentpodcast.com/forum and sign up for a membership. It's free. You can discuss current events and politics with conservatives just like yourself. It's a great way to get your voice heard, and it'll make you feel warm and fuzzy inside. I promise. Check it out, www.thecurrentpodcast.com/forum. Ooh, welcome back, everybody, to The Current, episode 73. I'm Jacob Bodner, Tom Frank Studios. More presidential trivia. Did you know John Quincy Adams was the only former president to serve in the House of Representatives, meaning he got out of the presidency and then went to the House of Representatives? Thought you would need that picture painted. Anyways, welcome back to the show, everybody. Last segment of the day, and then you're out of here. I had a hold on you for about an hour, and now you're going to be gone. It's like being in school, because you're learning and you're having fun. Well, the having fun part, never mind. We always like to end the show on a good note, or I like to sometimes, and that would be our good news from Iraq. Every week we do the good news from Iraq, three or four stories, depending on how much patience I have to search through the liberal press. And this week I had four, but then the website that had the fourth one, for some reason the article had expired and I couldn't get it. So when I went to do the notes today, I'd bookmarked it earlier in the week and it expired on me. So whatever. I got three. Next week I'll do five. How about that? Jesus Christ almighty, I'm burping like crazy. First one, U.S. Iraqi troops detained 30 militiamen. The U.S. and Iraqi troops detained up to 30 Shiite militiamen in the southern city of I'm totally going to butcher this name, Diwaniya. Early on Saturday, a local police source said the troops raided neighborhoods of Nada and Sadr in eastern Diwani, the same city that I said before, that I totally said different that time, 180 kilometers south of Baghdad, targeting local leaders of Mahid Army militia loyal to the radical cleric Muqtada al-Sadr, and detained some 30 suspects. Awesome. Round of applause for the detainees. For the detainers, excuse me, for detaining those people. Next one. Major Iraq reconstruction handed over to Iraqis. The U.S. military's effort to rebuild major infrastructure in Iraq will be winding down during the coming year, leaving the Iraqi government to fund the effort and to find engineers capable of handling the projects. In a VOA interview, the American general, who has been in charge of the effort for the past year, said Iraq could turn to such countries as China, India, and Iran to provide the expertise it needs. Let's get an applause for handing things over to the Iraqis, which is the goal of this mission and the things the Democrats believe we aren't doing. And last but not least, more about reconstruction. Iraq reconstruction efforts making meaningful progress, something the liberals also say is not happening. United States-backed programs designed to jumpstart Iraq's battered infrastructure are making meaningful progress, a senior U.S. Army engineer general said in Baghdad. More than 4,100 projects from 4,700 planned projects were completed at the end of fiscal year 2007, he said. We still have another 582 projects ongoing, Brigade General Walsh said. But 4,100 of 4,700 were completed at the end of fiscal year 2007. That deserves an applause. Actually, that deserves a crowd surge. There we go. All right, that's the good news from Iraq. Hope you all enjoyed it. Hope you all take it to note so you don't just believe all the bad crap you hear in the liberal media. That does it for this episode of The Current. Wait, do I have any announcements? I'm trying to think. Do I have anything to say? Next episode will be probably next Sunday. Which, I don't know, let's do the math in our heads here. 28th of October is when we'll do our next episode. You can check the show notes at thecurrentpodcast.com. You can check segment episodes from there. You can also check anything I write on my blog, as well as anything we've ever done on the show, any show we've ever done on there, thecurrentpodcast.com. Enjoy it. As for that, that does it for this episode. Another one in the books, number 73. Man, we are getting up there. It's unbelievable. I'm Jacob Bodner in the Tom Frank Studios. Have a glorious week, everybody. Don't get killed. I don't know why I said that. We'll leave you today with one more clip. We'll do a Yo Mama clip. A Yo Mama clip at the end of the day. Here we go. Yo Mama clip of the day. End of our show, episode 73. Goodbye, everybody. Goodbye.
Jordan is clear evidence. Your breath is so bad, your hair's curling away from your face.
Not true. My hair was straight till I saw your mom naked.
The following was a Tom Frank Studios production. For all our episodes and the show notes, visit www.thecurrentpodcast.com.